Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second? Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
This episode is sponsored by Section 8 Rentals Made Easy. For years, Section 8 Rentals have been one of the best ways to make money in real estate. But most people overlook the program because they've never had a guide show them how to easily navigate the system and get paid. In this ebook, you will learn how to make your property available for Section 8, how to pass the inspection, and how to get paychecks rolling in like clockwork. Visit Section8RentalsMadeEasy.com or click the link in the show notes to get your copy today.
So you want to start a podcast, huh? Well, we got something to help you. The Black Real Estate Dialogue brings you the How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience ebook and webinar bundle.
We are controlling transmission.
Come and put info into action as we show you the step-by-step process to sharing your successful podcast on a budget. This bundle is full of the exact details, social media hacks, and podcasting process we've used to gain 13,000 downloads and over 10,000 Instagram followers. But that's not all. As a bonus, you'll receive the exact super trackers we use to stay organized and free access to our private Facebook group designed to help you execute. Make sure you click that link now because there is an audience for you to reach. The How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience, the ebook and webinar bundle presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Do you really think investing in real estate is too expensive? Well, you wrong about that. Presenting a beginner's guide to buying your first out-of-state property, a Black Real Estate Dialogue course. That's right, it's the new course presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue, teaching you how to develop the investor's mindset, the advantages of investing out-of-state, getting your finances in order, finding the right location, assembling your team, creating financing strategies, how to find and analyze properties, how to find tenants, real-life case studies, and so much more in bonus content.
Oh yeah, did we mention you have lifetime access?
My goodness! If you have dreams of buying a property out of state but have no idea where to start, well, this is the guide for you. Learn the tips from someone with firsthand experience. Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate?
Yeah.
Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance?
You know who it is?
The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community. No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, what's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 3 times a month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to gumroad.com/bread. That's gumroad.com/BRED. It's the Real Estate Investing Community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 64. A couple quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to this on. This will help us reach more people, and it'll also help us move up in the ranking. So thank you in advance for supporting us in that way. And also, if you'd like to get the latest updates on what's happening at the Black Real Estate Dialogue, text BRED to 21,000 to join the free VIP text list. Lastly, if you want to gain early access to episodes, bonus content, discounts on merch, and more, join our Patreon program. Visit patreon.com/Black Real Estate Dialogue to join or visit the link in the show notes. Very excited for this episode. I'm sure y'all will learn a whole lot from Torrance Reed. Let me know what you think. I'm looking forward to hearing from you all. Without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Here with me today, I have Torrance Reed out of Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Torrance, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Thank you. Thank you. Listen to the podcast a lot. So, you know, looking forward to speaking with you.
Definitely. So tell us more about who you are, where you're from and everything. So we can get to know you a bit before we dive into everything.
Sure. Lifelong philanthropist, engineer. I build things. I help startups and small businesses scale, right? Like that's what I've been doing for about the last decade and a half. Many of those things tend to lend to either the Black community or the HBCU community, right? But just for the most part, you know, just been building things to help people help themselves, right? Whether that's some entrepreneurial platform or financial literacy community, right? I've always just been someone who, you know, trying to take my skill sets and figure out how I can, you know, help other people.
Definitely, for sure, for sure. So, man, tell us more about HBCU Realty, HBCU Wall Street. I've been seeing it around for quite some time now. So tell us more about, you know, how that came to be and, you know, what the goals are and everything.
Sure, sure. Good friend of mine, my brother, business partner, fellow Aggie, Jamaris Payton. You know, when we got out of school, we saw that there was a lack of social skills needed to, you know, go from college to corporate America. There was a lack of financial literacy skills needed to go from basically a broke college student to now a participating economic member of society, right? So it started with us sharing a picture of Reginald F. Lewis, right? What we wanted to do was highlight the financiers and financial related individuals that came from HBCUs. Fast forward 6 months later, and we have a group me that at that point maybe has 1,000 people. And our social media page at that point has like 20,000 people in like 6 months, right? And so it just took off and it turned into this community. It turned into us traveling up and down the East Coast, teaching college students about financial literacy, how they could turn their environment and their ideas into assets, right? And just ultimately how they could matriculate through school and graduate in a better fiscal position, because that helps everybody. That helps the community, that helps the economy, that helps the school, that helps their family, right? There's not a person you can't name that benefits from college students graduating in a more fiscally responsible position, mm-hmm. right? So we started that and the movement behind that just grew and grew and grew. More people started messing with it. More entities, corporate entities, big name entities, we started doing more partnerships. And as we started talking more about wealth, the idea of real estate started to come up a lot more, mm-hmm. right? You can't talk wealth and not talk real estate, yeah. right? You can't teach people the actual application of starting at square one and checking their credit score and ending up at step 10, which is an actual home that they close on, right? And everything in between, which is save your money, right? Whether that's debt snowball or what have you. But you basically learn how to budget, you learn how to save, and then you learn about cash flow, then you learn about assets, and then you do small investments, and then you do a bigger investment, right? Like that's the user journey of going from lack of financial literacy to acquiring financial literacy in this country, mm-hmm. in this country, right?
Yep.
The actual practical application of that is buying a house,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, we just started figuring what better way to show people how to do what we're teaching them, because that's what we always were about, right? We would present ideas and present theories, and in the very next moment, or literally the very next breath, present a way that you could do it,
mm-hmm.
right? So buying a house or investing in a house just became the practical application of everything we was teaching. So HBCU really was born, right? And that became kind of like this thing within HBCU Wall Street, because everybody's not interested in real estate, right? There are a lot of other facets of financial literacy, right? Like there's investing, there's the stock market, there's entrepreneurship, right? Like real estate is only one piece of finance. So we started a separate thing with the idea to crowdfund the rehabilitation of homes around HBCUs, mm-hmm. right? Historically, HBCUs are in low-income communities. I mean, the hood or the projects or whatever you want to call it, right? Low-income housing, the hood, Section 8, I mean, whatever your community calls it. Those houses are within eyesight of the school. Yep. You can literally see them, right, from the campus. And a lot of times it's almost like across the street, there is a row of 10 boarded up homes across the street from the science building of a school,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, I said to myself, for one, I'm tired of looking at this. So then I said that to myself again, and I said, well, I'm going to do something about it. We're going to do something about it. So what we did is we started to find people who fit a collective profile. That's either they have an affinity for HBCUs or they want to get into real estate.
Yeah.
The idea behind it was we would crowdfund smaller sums of money than what's normally required, right? And we would literally crowdfund the purchase of homes, and we would crowdfund the rehab. And, you know, however the ownership was done, right, whether it was equity or whether it was loan based, the individuals participating in it, one, got to actually be a part of something,
right?
Two, they get to own a house, right? Because getting a piece of paper that says you have a stake in something has a psychological effect, even if you don't 100% own it,
right?
So some people may never have $50,000 to go in on the rehab of a second home or their first rental property, but a lot of people can come up with $8,000 or $10,000, right? So that's just what we've been doing, right? We purchased our first home as a collective, right? Everyone on our executive team has rental properties or investment properties personally, but this was the actual first property that HBC really purchased. So we purchased a home that's a 5-minute drive from Tuskegee University. We're working with a group called Rebuild Tuskegee. They do the same thing, right? Like they take dilapidated and boarded up homes around the schools, and they rehab them.
Wow.
You know, so we're working together, right? And so for me, it was just, I'm not one to talk, right? I'm tired of talking.
Yeah.
You ride past these houses, let's everybody get $5,000 or $10,000 together and let's make it happen.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So, that's what I've been doing with HBC Realty for the last couple of years. It's been a journey.
Man.
It's been a journey.
That's crazy. Yep. So something you mentioned made me think about something. So I was in Atlanta for a wedding in the summer of 2019, and I had never been to Morehouse or Spelman. So me and my friend, we were driving around the neighborhood, and I'm like, man, what is this? Like, we drove at day, we drove at night. We spent a lot of time over there, and I'm like, man, there's so much opportunity here. There's so, like, I just couldn't believe it, man. Everything you mentioned just about literally being across the street.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I saw when I was out there. And I'm like, man, this is a lot of, and I said, this is what I said to myself. I said, some people might see just garbage in a Black community that's not worth nothing. Other people will see opportunity. And I think there's plenty of opportunity to do things that you're doing for us to kind of go and rebuild those communities. You know, I just feel like there's no reason for the community surrounding such great schools to be in that condition.
I think a big part of it is, one, you have to get all stakeholders to understand that they have an interest. The school immediately has more houses. The unsavory characters that usually congregate around these dilapidated homes and these boarded up areas disappear, right? But then you also take the members of the community, like the people who are there or the people who linger there, like whatever nomenclature you want to call them, the people of the community. You let them participate in the in the rehab. Well, even if that's, you know, cleaning up the yard or hauling the trash or anything, right? You give the community a more psychological sense of rehabilitation.
Yeah.
And the students, imagine being introduced to the idea as a student of collectively you and three or four other people getting together and taking your refund check and you having an ownership stake in the house that you live in, that you get a paycheck, that you get a check for when you move out of. And if everything goes how we want it to, you could possibly get volunteer and apprenticeship hours from the house, right?
Yep.
So no one has brought this idea of wealth and home ownership and the power that the industry and just the behemoth structure that real estate is. Like, nobody has brought that understanding and the actual literalness of it down to the mind of an 18-year-old, right? In this country, it's like, oh, okay, I'm 30 now. I guess I should start looking into getting a crib, or I guess I should look into real estate. And it's funny you said, you made the comment about Morehouse. I went to A&T and there were some homes near the school that I walked past every day on the way to one of the convenience stores. And back then, I'm just looking at them like, oh man, why is these trashy looking houses near my school? walking past the houses with the money in my pocket to buy one of them, mm-hmm. right? And didn't buy it, of course.
Yeah.
Fast forward 15 years later, of course, the school has that area fenced off and they're probably about to build a new parking deck there or something, right? So the idea for HBC really was literally born from personal experience, right? Like the mm-hmm. best things are created because of the co-founders' experiences, right? I didn't realize when I was in college the earning potential of literally those houses that I was walking by,
yeah.
right? Because nowhere, and you said it earlier, and this I think at times is the hard part to get our people to understand, right? Like nowhere looks like forever,
yeah.
right? Somebody's gonna, they're gonna come through and bulldoze it, they're gonna rehab it, they're gonna put a park there, it's gonna be a building there. Like it's not gonna look like that forever. That forever may not happen until you're not here, but if you own it, that means your family own it when you leave here. So we gotta get out of the it looks like crap mentality,
yeah.
right? Well, make it not look like crap,
right?
Right,
yeah,
yeah, yep, yep. So, yeah.
What was so walking through what that process was like with just you all getting the first property and I guess getting everyone together on the same page, like what was that like? Because I know that's not always easy. So what was that like?
I was about to say that it was tough.
Yeah.
So in all transparency, I actually legally did it incorrectly the first time. Mm-hmm. So the first time I did this, I put $5,000 earnest money deposit down on a house, sent out an email, right? Because we just have thousands of emails from the years of HBC Wall Street stuff and said, hey, who wants to be an investor in this house? Almost 250 people replied and pledged to give $2,500 each. But then I had my guy call me and said, hey, you know that email you just sent out? Well, according to the SEC, you probably didn't send it out correct, right? So that's part of the reason I've been doing this for so long, right? I had to back up and do it legally correctly, mm-hmm. right? Because there's all the ways out there, right? Like there's crowdfunding, the Jobs Act, right? There's all these FINRA regulated crowdfunding platforms where you can now let people purchase securities and equities, mm-hmm. right? So I had to step back and kind of just sulk and sit in this industry and figure out what I'm going to do, right? And so that was kind of tough because I had a lot of people who were like gung-ho, like, okay, what are we doing? We going in on a house near A&T? Let's do it. I got my money. And I'm like, hold up. Let me see something. I need to check some things.
Yeah.
But all the while, people are like emailing me. People are like signing up to go in on the houses that I had up on some website that I couldn't even find anymore. I didn't even know where people were signing up at.
Yeah.
Right. So people are still signing up and I'm like, man, this is a sign. I can't let this die. Right. And I knew there was heavy interest. Right. So this is part of the difficulty of me mentally moving forward. Like one, I never wanted to start something, didn't finish it. Right. Like that was just the personal side of it. Mm-hmm. Two, had all these people who were like, hey, what you doing? We ready to do something with you. And then the other part of it was I just personally want a lot of my wealth and riches to come from real estate. So if I can't dredge through this real estate scenario, then I ain't going to be able to get through any of the other ones
yeah.
that are going to come up, right? So I backed up, I regrouped. I think I just kind of put my head down a little bit more in regards to it. And I, throughout this whole time, right? I mean, at this point in time, a year and some change has went by since I first put the idea out. And I've lost my earnest money on three or four different houses at this point, right? Mm-hmm. One in Baltimore, one near Morgan State. I mean, I was putting up $5,000 or $6,000 because I have 18 people over here who say they're going to give me 50 bands.
Yeah.
So I would put up the $5,000 or $6,000 and then I have a hard time collecting the money.
Yeah.
And then I lose my $5,000 or $6,000.
Wow.
Right. So by the time I bought this Tuskegee house, like I'm literally already in 20 bands trying to buy these houses. I mean, granted, that's not a lot of money, but it's not a little bit of money either.
That's a lot of money.
Right.
Nobody wants to lose that money, man.
Well, you know what, man? I both times I sucked it up to learning and I yeah. said, you know what? And can't nobody say I don't got no skin in the game now. I'll show you yeah. these four receipts that say I got 20,000 skins in the game. Right. So fast forward, I now have another core group of people. Right. It was 10 of us at that point. And so the strategy was I would find a house that maybe would cost about 15, 16 that needed maybe 20 to 30 in rehab. Right. These were going to be they're buying whole cribs mm-hmm. that are going to be rental, student rentals, right? So I found a couple, right? So I would collect the money from people, and it's like, okay, boom, you know, 5 or 10 people are sending me $15,000 or $20,000 in increments of $2,000 or $4,000. And then I can't collect the other 30 to rehab. So it's like, I saw it becoming really difficult to do this, and I didn't own the house. So I just had an epiphany one day and say, you know what? I'm just going to buy 4 walls that need rehab. We're just going to buy it. I don't care if it's a piece of crap. We're going to buy it, and then we'll worry about how we fix it after that. I just want to get the ownership of it. Once I own the deed, how to fix it will fall into place if I just keep working it, right? Mm-hmm. So the house was about $6,000.
Yeah.
Living in Maryland, right? Living in the DC area. I know that some of the people around her mortgage. And so for me, it's like, even if you do have to go find the money to rehab it later, like, I can't understand how people just are not taking to the fact that you can go buy a house out here for the same amount of money that somebody spent on 1 month of their mortgage.
Right.
Yeah. So we bought the house. By this time there's 5 or 6 people.
Yeah.
Right. We bought a house. It's $5,000, we get an estimate of maybe $45,000 to fix it, mm-hmm. right? So the idea was, we're all just going to split the rehab. Everybody was going to put up $8,000 to $10,000.
Right.
So everybody at this point has maybe put up about half the money we decided. And then, you know, I'm talking to the contractor that's helping me. And we're like, yo, why is everybody putting up all the cash? Like, this is great. Like, let's go use some other people's money and then, you know, use a rental income to pay for that money, right? Whether that's private money or hard money or whatever. Like, let's not have everybody wop out $10,000.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's basically where we're at now. Right. Like, the house is about 60% rehabbed. I mean, we're looking to put a tenant in it for the summer session. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, if not by then, definitely someone for the school year. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, all in all, it's been a learning experience. Right. I've had to manage people. I've had to manage people's money. I've had to manage expectations. I've had to manage their belief in the fact that even though we all in this together, that at the bottom line of it is that I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah.
Right. So, you talk to the people a lot, right? When you're trying to rehab a house with somebody, y'all basically become homies, whether y'all homies or not. Yeah. Right. So I think now they have a little bit more belief in me, right? As we've talked to each other a lot over the years, I mean, you share personal things, you just get to know each other a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right. So, and that was difficult. I knew at some point I had to gain these people's trust, right? I think the trust of them understanding this is the lane I operate in was already there, right? Because they were able to see the other things that I've done, right? Yeah. But as far as us 5 of people all collectively on several occasions sending thousands of dollars to an account that I then give to someone else, it ultimately has to be an end product that someone can move into, right? Like, you gotta believe in the person that's leading that,
right?
Because none of us are in the same state, right? And the house is in a state that none of us are in either,
right?
Right. So it's been a fun journey. It's been a fun journey.
How did you? So obviously, it's HBCUs everywhere, right? How did you settle on Tuskegee? How did you know? All right, this is gonna be the opportunity. Was it like, you were looking at a whole lot of places and that was just the right price? Like, because there might be people, right, who maybe they want to help the homes around their own HBCU they went to. Maybe they didn't go to HBCU, but they want to find one where they can kind of replicate or maybe even work with you all to do the same thing.
Right, right. Well, that's a good question. We're definitely going to do this at other schools, right? I'm already looking, trying to figure out where we're going to go next. I want 100 doors around 10 universities. So I would say pick a house, right? And I think you've even said this, you posted it, your guests have said it. Nothing is going to be perfect. You're going to have analysis paralysis. You can listen to podcasts and read all the ebooks for years.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have to jump off the porch or jump out the window or whatever you call it, right? And you might end up doing the wrong deal the first time. Yeah. You might not have got the right interest rate. You might end up only making $3,000. And if you had to analyze this for 6 more months, you could have made $10,000 on whatever you're doing. But at some point, you just got to pull the damn trigger, right? And that's what it was for me, because I have been looking at houses where my other executive team members live at. I've been looking at places where they have houses at. I have been looking at places where the other contributors that went in on this house live at. I looked at places where other real estate investors that I have relationships with, such as yourself, are at, right? I looked at all of those things. And after you do that for 6 months and you're like, you know what? I'm tired of every day somebody keeps sending me a house with the specs and asking me, do I want it? And you like, oh man, I thought my strategy was Atlanta, because I've been studying Atlanta for the last 10 days. And boom, somebody sends you a house you should buy near Jackson State, and it just throws all your analysis for the last 2 weeks in the trash can.
Yeah.
Right? You'll never buy anything, right? So the fact that it was near a historically relevant university helped, right? Tuskegee is one of the known schools, right? And just from a literal standpoint, if we look up 50 years from now and some of our HBCUs don't exist, I don't think that's one of them that won't exist, right? Like, there's 10 or 15 of them that kind of are a staple, right? Granted, that's because of where they're at and their size and XYZ. But in doing this and in knowing that I had to prove to myself, to my team, to my followers, to the world, to my lenders, right? I wanted to go with a more well-known university,
yeah.
Right? Which kind of sucked for me, because being in the HBCU advocacy world for the last, you know, almost decade, I always try to big up the smaller schools,
yeah,
on purpose, because the other schools don't need any pub,
right?
Right. So that was how we picked Tuskegee, right? I literally was sitting at the park one day and I said, I need to stop trying to do this by myself. I need to find an entity that's already done this or doing this.
Right.
And I contacted Rebuild Tuskegee, right? So, I mean, in a nutshell, it came available at a perfect time,
yeah.
Right? And I was tired of doing analysis, and I was just like, look, I want to get this going. So on that day, I would have bought the house if it was in Mississippi, it could have been in Texas, it could have been in Florida. Like, I don't care. On that day, I was going to wire somebody some money,
yeah,
for a house, right?
Yep.
That's how we got that one, basically.
That's good, man. What does that partnership look like between your organization and Rebuild Tuskegee? Are they supporting with like some of the rehab, or like how does that work?
So technically, I mean, so from a literal standpoint, we're doing a partnership, right? Mm-hmm. Where we're trying to rehab and revitalize, you know, the homes in the community. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a similar mission and vision. Mm-hmm. From an actual standpoint, they are actually the general contract, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning they are handling the actual rehab,
wow,
right? Like literally ordering materials. Hiring the guys, right? Going through punch out lists with the contractors on my side,
yeah,
right? And I knew that, right? I was aware of the fact that the group that we decided to partner with, that was also, you know, the person that sat in the middle of the transaction, mm-hmm, was also going to be someone who was actually going to rehab the house,
right?
Right? And I just felt more comfortable about that, because that's their area,
right?
That's what they know, right? I mean, that means they might even know the guy at the lumber counter at Lowe's, right? You always, yeah, go with people who are familiar with the environment, and you know, that plus the, okay, I'm just going to buy something today, right? Like, it all came together and it made sense.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think that's such a good thing to have that partnership, just because it kind of, you're kind of leading the charge and rallying the troops. But I mean, I'm sure for you, it kind of takes some of the pressure off, because it's like, this is their wheelhouse. They've done it before. Like you said, same mission. So you can at least have one, this property, and you show like the proof of concept. It's off to the races from there.
Right, right. And that's basically what it is, right?
Yeah.
Like, the group of people, we're already talking about, you know, what's the next one going to be, or, you know, or are we going to try to get into multifamily, or are we going to try to take the equity out of this and buy another one, right? Like, the intent of why I wanted to do this has already started manifest, right?
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to bring in people who maybe not were as involved in real estate or didn't have as much capital, mm-hmm, and just pull them along at the same time, right? Because I've been making sure that everybody who's involved know exactly what's going on, right, at each step of the way,
right?
Right? Like, this is what the contractor is doing, right? Like, this is why you get an estimate. This is a change order, right? This is this kind of wood. This is why this kind of wood is on the roof, right? So the intent for me behind APC really was also a community-oriented learning pad, right? But being more of an engineer and a builder, I tend to not do the greatest job of deploying educational resources, right? Because I'm more of a, well, let's just do it type, yeah, of person, right?
That makes sense, man. That's dope. So what So I know obviously not everybody who's part of the group is part of this particular deal. So how about those who are, you know, who still want to, who are still interested, who still have capital to deploy? Are you kind of just in communication with them, just letting them know like, hey, you know, there might be opportunities in the future? Like, what does that look like? I know you have a huge like list of people who are down.
Right. So the way we did that was for a while, we had a closed group in our online HPC Wall Street community. And so for a while, what I did was leave the group open and let people still express interest. But at some point, you know, I don't remember the day, but there was a cutoff, right? Let me know today if you want to go in on the house we're discussing. Here's the wire information, right? And it was kind of like, if you don't want to go in on this one, that's fine, right? Like, yeah, we're going to do others, right? So there's a fine line in between solicitation, right? Mm-hmm. When someone hasn't signed up for things behind a username and login, right? So just being kind of maneuver through that and still keep people abreast of what's going on. Mm-hmm. But we do have quite a bit of people who signed up and said, hey, I'm interested. I may not be interested in that house, but I'm definitely interested, right? Because the idea is to basically build a framework that can be deployed in any area. Right. Yeah. Not just by HPC Realty. You may have different other community and economic development, you know, centered organizations that may want to do this same thing. Yeah. Right. And so I'll have lessons learned. Right. I'll have methods that they can use. Right. Nothing's going to change about real estate. It's real estate. Right. It's transactional. Right. It goes how it goes. Right. But there are some things that I've learned in trying to pull together a large group of people and get a micro sum of money out of them to accomplish a large goal, yeah, which is really what we're doing. Right. It takes some mental shifting. Right.
100%. Yeah. Man. So I think I'm really excited because, you know, it's kind of the starting stages, right? This is version one. And right, you know, once you get this down, I'm excited to follow and see, and hopefully we can continue to update everyone on how things go. You know, I can't wait to hear about, you know, this first one being done, fully rehabbed and everything, and just learning about, you know, all the future developments. You know, I feel like the best is yet to come. You know, like, you have you have people who are ready to invest and support the cause. I'm just excited to see where you all go once this one is done. I think it's straight to the top from there.
Yeah, I would definitely love to come back and, you know, talk to you about it after we finish the rehab. I do know that when we finish that house, we plan to go physically down to Tuskegee and, you know, do a small ribbon cutting, yeah, you know, in lieu of COVID, right? Because my idea is to work, I want to work with the universities as much as possible, right? Yeah. A lot of people don't understand that HBCUs used to be incubators for the Black community, right? It used to be where we thrive at, and it permeated outward from the university into the community. Mm-hmm. So now you just have the schools either thriving in the middle and the community deteriorating on the outside, or you have the community thriving and the school deteriorating in the middle, yeah, right? So a lot of universities have a dedicated community engagement or external outreach or community affairs. There's usually an office that's pegged with making sure that the community and the school are walking in cohesion as far as development and what it means for both of them,
yeah,
right? That's kind of the approach I want to take. I want to work more with those offices and more with those groups, because those people who are usually abreast and on the cusp of what's the city's plans for development, right? What is the county doing in regards to economic progression, and how does the school fit into it? Like, there's always, somebody always has plans for that plan, mm-hmm, right? So you don't want to just be at the bottom just building houses, right? Like, I want to know, like, what's going on with this block in 5 years, right? And so how can I sit in the middle as a fiduciary and make sure that the school is benefiting from that as much as it can, and so is the community, so are the students, and so are the outside investors who put their money into it and have nothing to do with the school or the community, right? So yeah, man, I'm excited. It's been a while. Like I said, I literally have been working on this for about 2 years, but I refuse to quit. Even if at some point, if I had to put up 100% of my own personal money, like, I was going to finish this house, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, definitely, how I go, man.
Definitely, yeah, definitely, man. So, man, where can people find you if they want to learn more, if they want to get on the list to learn about future opportunities, man? Where's the best place for them to reach you, to learn more about the organization and what y'all have going on?
It's a couple of places. So we have our HBCU Wall Street community, which is just HBCUWallStreet.com. Mm-hmm. And inside of that is a HBCU Realty Group. We're at HBCU Wall Street on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. There is HBCURealty.com that actually has a little bit more information about what we do exactly with the houses. And then if you have specific questions, you can send emails to info@HBCURealty.com. So we are definitely welcoming more individuals to get on board with us. Like you said, a lot of people want to see that it's done, right? Probably have a couple thousand people waiting to say, oh, okay, they did it. Okay, now I got my money ready.
Definitely, man. Definitely. Well, man, I appreciate you coming on the show. I think, you know, it'll definitely serve as an inspiration to a lot of people who perhaps are thinking about something similar, and also, you know, just putting more light on what y'all are doing. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely important. You know, we just have to take control and, you know, we have all the resources and the money collectively to rebuild our communities, even if it's one house at a time, we can do it. So that's my biggest takeaway from this episode, man. So definitely appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah. I love to come back when we got this house finished.
Yeah.
That's what the people want to see and hear, that it actually got finished. Yeah, right?
So definitely. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. If you want to stay up to date on what we have going on and get the latest updates, text BRED to 21,000. If you want to support us as an official patron, go to patreon.com/Black Real Estate Dialogue. Thank you so much again. I look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram @BlackRealEstateDialogue and on Twitter @BREDPodcast. That's BRED Podcast. Until next time. If you've reached the end of the show, thanks so much for listening. We value your time, and that's why we want to give you the best sounding, best produced quality of content we possibly can. And this podcast you've been listening to has been edited and produced by yours truly. I'm Donald the Voice. I'm a 10-year voiceover artist, narrator, and production specialist that wants to see only the best life-giving, equipping, and long-lasting content be produced to help others. So if you have commercial, video editing, or other production needs, I'd love to talk with you. That's right. Visit DonaldTheVoice.com and hit the contact page to talk about how we can work together to bring your content to life. Okay, so you're not an email person. Well, you can also contact me on Instagram @DonaldTheVoice or on Facebook.com/Donald.TheVoice. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.